Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Chris up here on Ben Buckler. It's a cold morning, but a beautiful, beautiful sunrise. And there's whales jumping out to sea. There's swimmers out beyond the rocks here, which is out in the big wide ocean. Good on them. They're obviously a training squad that go every Thursday. And I'm always so impressed to see them so far out at sea. That they're an ocean swimming squad, and I guess, and today it's quite rough, so they're doing a great job. The ski paddlers have come and gone. It's the whales are doing their thing, man, and the sunrise is just gorgeous. Beautiful clear skies. Obviously it's an ocean swim day for Chris. So just let these people go past. So when we put our head on the pillow every night and we lift it off every morning, there's really, at the start of the pillow, head on the pillow, there might be somebody next to you, there might not be. But as you drift towards sleep, it's you. It's not you as a business person. It's not you as a father or mother or a partner. It's you. And at the end of that process of letting go the world around you and falling asleep, you come to realize that there is a thing called you. There is a thing called soul, or there is a thing called love, or there is a thing called being you. And if you're not happy with that and you're putting your head on the pillow, it can only be because you're attached to something that isn't you. So if you put your head on the pillow at night and you've done a hard day's work, the work you've done is not with you on the pillow. The fact that you've done a hard day's work is. So you are somehow a product of what you do. That you on the pillow can't be the product of what you earned or what you got or the trophies on the shelf or the money in the bank. That you is a product of the work you did. And sometimes we make the mistake of filling up the day with things we don't call the work we do. I remember, it's 50 years ago, my next door neighbor, I got a job out of university, which I had put myself through for 4 years. I got a job as the environmental engineer for Australian Portland Cement in Geelong. I loved Geelong because it was the gateway to the surfing world. I was already a patrol captain at Janjuk Surf Club down near Torquay. I loved paddling my wave ski and entered into competitions with it. I loved scuba diving and snorkeling and catching fish and paddling my kayak out in the ocean, and this was my whole world. So when I got a job at Australian Port and Cement in Geelong, and consider the fact that I was now going to be an hour and a half closer to the favourite places in the world that I love so much, it was a dream come true. We moved down without a job, without starting the job. We moved down and got ourselves a little house back in those days. Those costs weren't part of a job promotion, a job application. We found ourselves a little place to live. Judy, my wife at the time, got herself a job in a kindergarten, which I'd paid for her to go through kindergarten college. And we were ready. And I turned up at the first day at Australian Portland Cement to start my job as the environmental engineer for Australian Port and Cement in Geelong. And they said, oh shit, bad luck. We've had two Chris Walkers, we've interviewed two Chris Walkers for the job, and we've given them both the job, but you're not the one. And so half an hour later, I left the reception of Australian Port and Cement in Geelong, unemployed. And with all sorts of accounts to pay for having moved to Geelong. And we certainly couldn't live off the wages of a kindergarten teacher. And so I needed work. And I asked my next door neighbour. I was talking to him about it. And he said, look, I own a trucking company. If you get a truck licence, you can drive trucks for me. And that'll work. You can earn lots of money doing that if you drive. And I thought, well, I can drive trucks. I can. So I went and paid for a driving instructor course, and I learnt to drive and got a license for articulated trucks and started driving for him. And one night I'd had a few drinks and I let the hi-fi loud, really loud. And the next morning I apologised to my next door neighbour. I said, I'm so sorry. I was sitting there with my missus just laughing, and we got a bit carried away and we left the music up. And he said, Chris, the day that I can't sleep is the day that I haven't worked hard enough. That's 50 years ago. I remember that conversation like it was now. And it's interesting to have thought that, because the guy never looked like he was working hard. And so it makes me think what he meant, because on Sundays he'd be out in the garden, hoeing the garden with a thing, making carrots in the backyard or whatever he did. And he was overweight, big heavy truck guy, happy as. And I thought to myself, what he meant was being productive. That's what he meant. The day that I have not been productive, I won't sleep. The day that I can't sleep, I haven't been productive enough. And so it goes to the quality of the things you do. And what we talk about in the manifestation formula, in success formula, is the prioritizing of things we do in our day. The day that I haven't worked hard enough means the day that I don't feel like I've been productive. And so we can work all day on a low priority thing, like getting healthy. You know, you say that's a high priority, but that's something you do so you can be productive, unless you're an Olympian. So the question's going to be, what do you feel productive? And I remembered him, and I go back to him, and I go, he had a wife and a family, not a young family, but he gave a lot of time to them, and he didn't call it family, he called it work. He didn't literally call it work, but he basically concluded that any time he spent with his wife and family was about being productive, was about bringing up his children. And so it wasn't just throwaway time that just happened to happen because he'd made babies. It was him doing something that he thought was important, was a priority for him. What was a priority for him was being productive, bringing up his kids. What was a priority for him was digging the garden, and so they didn't have to pay for or buy, or they could own their own vegetable patch, which he, I assume, felt productive doing, and running his trucking company and helping his neighbour. These things weren't just throwaways. These were what he called work. I assume that if work didn't go well, if he didn't have a good experience with his boys, because they were a couple of ragamuffins and his daughters, if he didn't have a good experience with his boys, he would probably not feel productive, but he would feel productive working on being productive, if that makes any sense. So it's not just about sitting in a coffee shop feeling relaxing. It's sitting in a coffee shop with a pen and paper writing out your love list. Because at least if you think writing out your love list is productive, that gives you more peace on the pillow at night. If I think having a conversation with somebody who's already made up their mind about something and then asking my opinion about it, if I feel that's not productive, I'll stop having it. If somebody sticks their nose in my business and it's not their business, I'll stop the conversation because it's unproductive to continue that conversation. And as a result of this sense of prioritization and priority and productivity, and not including productivity is not just a work thing, but it's what I do around my desk and what I do around my health and fitness and eating and diet. As a result of all this, I put my head on the pillow and I sleep solid. And I haven't had a problem sleeping. But let me tell you a little bit of a story about when I did have a problem sleeping. I went to India from New York with my partner at the time to study yoga for 6 months and to write a book. The book got completed and the yoga got completed. I did 6 months in India living in a house, mostly in hotels actually, going to yoga for 2 hours a day physically to the yoga shala, to the basement of this teacher's house, and worked through the practice of yoga. I read books during the day, so I studied the science of yoga and recovered from the excruciating experience of the yoga in the morning. Went to the doctor usually because I had some stomach or brain upset from doing the yoga, and went through that transformation for 6 months. About halfway through the 6 months, something went wrong. I can't label what it is, but I'm sure an Ayurvedic practitioner would give it a name. But the bottom line was I got insomnia and I couldn't sleep. And I've never had insomnia before. And insomnia is, for me, at that time, is I just couldn't, I'd lie down and my world would not slow down. Even though my world, living in India doing yoga, was really slow. My brain had triggered into a gear, or my metabolism had triggered into a gear that it was unwilling to release at night. And so even if the lights went out and I put nightshades on and I took medications and I took all sorts of advices from doctors and things, it couldn't work. So I ended up doing what's called a panchakarma, and this, it's got a name, I think it's called Shiadhara. And I had to catch after yoga every day, for 7 days, they said. I had to catch a rickshaw right across Mysore, which is about a 45-minute rickshaw ride through hell and back, traffic and fumes and dust, to a little shack on the outskirts of town where there was a sort of a hospital, Ayurvedic hospital. And I went into this place and they take me in a room and I had to strip down into my undies. The first thing that I would have to do is lie on a table, and two rather obese Indian ladies would come in with very hot oil and rub my body raw. Rub it with very hot oil. And then I would go into a steam tank, which is a little box in this place, was a little wooden box where my head poked out, but my body was inside the box, like an Amazon package, but a head poking out of it. And they would get a Bunsen burner, a little flame cooker, with a pressure cooker, with the lid, with a rubber pipe in the release valve of the lid, piping steam, which is superheated steam, into the bottom of the box. If I move my leg, I would wipe my foot across the top of this superheated steam pipe and burn myself. And I did three or four times exactly that. So I learned to sit pretty still. After I was in the tank, steaming and sweating and sweating, I had to lie on a table on my back, and they got a big bucket of very hot milk straight from a cow that had walked past the front door with the milkman. And they boiled up the water and they'd put it in a bucket above my head, and with a cord like a wick of a candle coming out of the bucket, they would wipe the hot milk across my forehead. It would run in my ears, in my eyes, and they'd wipe it backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards across my forehead. With all that finished, and that would be an hour and a half, all of that process, quite a long process. With that all finished, I'd be able to get up and wash myself off with a bucket and a ladle, get dressed again and catch another rickshaw, 45 minutes home, and again that night not sleep at all. Next day, same thing. After 6 days, I was completely exhausted from lack of sleep. I was probably sleeping 2 hours a day. I was exhausted from the lack of sleep, but I was also exhausted from the yoga and traveling across doing this Shiadhara, which I'm calling it, may not have been that, the label for it. On day 7, I slept like a baby. And I've never had a problem sleeping since. So I don't know what they did, but they reprogrammed my head that when I put my head on the pillow, I could sleep. But there was a few things happened in that period. The first, and it's really important thing to realize, is when you're studying yoga in India for 2 hours a day, there's another 22 hours to fill. In that 22 hours, I needed to eat, I needed to hang out with people I knew, and I needed to write a book, and so on. So there's a massive opportunity in 22 hours a day to be unproductive. I realized that I, at the hotel where we're staying, was hanging out by the swimming pool quite a lot, reading books. And I wonder what those books were about, because if you hang out by a swimming pool and read a book that is going to help you be more productive, or you feel is actually adding value to your life, you probably put your head on the pillow at the end of the day and say, I've done a good day's work, because what I read today, even though it was by the pool in a very relaxed state of mind, was very productive. But if I'm reading some fiction novel which adds no value to me in my universe, if I'm relaxing, trying to recover from torn hamstrings and broken fingers and God knows what that you get in a yoga, intense yoga 6 months, then it's probably, even that is, could be considered to be productive, because you're not just sitting around, you're sitting down trying to recover so you can get back into the training. I realize now, years and years later from that event, that the reason I wasn't sleeping, although it was quite strongly biological, that something had taken place in my body and the Ayurvedic process was absolutely instrumental in giving me back my sleep, what it also gave me back was a sense of being productive, because after that, things changed in what I did. I still did the yoga every day for 2 hours, and I still did the writing of the book, but I didn't hang out so much by the pool. I didn't spend so much time in Nana Land being wasting my time. And then I also started to contemplate how long I really wanted to be in India. And we also started to do a few excursions to a Buddhist temple nearby and Hindu caves up in the mountains where there were sadhus. try to explore things a little bit more, and productivity came back. And so it's interesting, this neighbor of mine who says to me, the day that I can't sleep is the day I haven't worked hard enough, has stuck with me. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because when we put our head on the pillow at night, there is no us, there is no we, there is no money, there is no car, there's no bus, there's no tram, there's no house, there's no bank account, there is just us. And if you want to call that us a soul, or you want to call that me a being, or whatever you want to label that thing is, it's you. And this is the you that's behind everything that goes on outside of you. And that you is not a blank white sheet of cold ice. It is a thing that has a function. It is a machine, or a thing that has been born for a reason, a purpose, and it needs to do that thing, that words, that purpose. It needs to do that in order to be at peace with itself, or feel productive, or have its place in nature. If you were able to ask a grain of sand, do you have a purpose? And the grain of sand would say, of course I do. I'm part of a beach. I'm really important to this beach. But if you ask most people, what's the purpose? They will say, fill up the time and work really hard. They'll externalize it. So there won't be a sense of internalized self-value. So what we define as work is really important. My work includes bringing up children. My work includes giving. It's all relatively intangible, isn't it? It's all relatively sensory. There is no exchange of apples and oranges. It's the work that I, it's the productivity I do that gets the orange to the table, is where self-worth comes from. There's nothing I've done or not done that's not worthy of love. And when I'm unproductive, that gets challenged. Nothing I've done or not done that's not worthy of love. And I think we need to be really, really mindful about that comment being misinterpreted from the point of view of what we call our work. Giving can be work, no matter how much we enjoy it or how much we feel obligated to do it. Giving can be called being productive, because it makes a difference. This is Chris. Have a great day.